ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते I was just remembering. I was holding my hands like this and I was remembering when I was initiated, Prabhupada told everyone, we were just sitting and Prabhupada would chant on the beads and he told everyone, sit with your hands like this. So that meant like on our laps. Maybe we can sit the whole class like this. So we're reading from the sixth canto, the seventh chapter, and there are two verses. I'll read the first verse. Second verse is on the board. This is verse 37. So I'll read text 37.
Tathapi na pratibhruyam guruvi pratitam kiyat bhavatam pratitam sarvam pranar artas chashadhaye.
Translation. This is Vishwarupa speaking, and he was requested by the demigods to be their priest and spiritual master, so this is his reply. All of you are my superiors, therefore, although accepting priesthood is sometimes reproachable, I cannot refuse even a small request from you. I agree to be your priest. I shall fulfill your request by dedicating my life and consciousness. So then today's verse.
Sri Bhadarayana Uvacha Tevya Evam Patishrutya Vishwarupa Mahatapaha Porahityam Vritash Chakre Paramena Samadhina Sri Bhadarayane Ruvacha Tevya Evam Pratishrutya Vishwarupo Mahatapaha Paurahityam Vritas Chakre Paramena Samadhina Sri Bhadarayane Ruvacha Tebhya Evam Pratishrutya Pratishrutya Vishwarupa Mahatapaha Porahityam Vritas Chakre Paramena Samadhina. Sri Bhadarayane Ruvacha Evam Evam Pratisrutya Vishwarupa Mahatapa Rahityam Vitas Chakre Paramena Samadhina Sri Bhadarayane Ruvacha Shrutya Vishwarupa Mahatapaha Tapa
Ladies. Vishwarupa Mahatapaha Purahityam Vritas Chakre Sri Bhadraya Neruvacha. Vishwarupa Mahatapaha Parahityam Vritas Chakre Samadhina. Word meanings. Sri Bhadrayani Uvacha. Sri Shukadev Goswami said, Tebhyaha, unto them, the demigods, evam, thus, pratishrutya, promising, visvarupaha, visvarupa, mahatapaha, the most exalted personality, paurahityam, the priesthood, vrittaha, surrounded by them, chakre, executed, paramena, supreme, samadhina, with attention. Translation. Sri Shukadev Goswami continued, O King, after making this promise to the demigods, the exalted Vishwarupa, surrounded by the demigods, performed the necessary priestly activities with great enthusiasm and attention. So let me read the last verse, and then I'll read this verse again. This is verse 37 again, and Vishwarupa is speaking, responding to the request of the demigods to accept the priesthood. All of you are my superiors. Therefore, although accepting priesthood is sometimes reproachable, that means there's a consideration that he shouldn't accept. But he's saying, because you're superiors, even though there may be consideration I shouldn't accept, I cannot refuse your request. So he doesn't really want to do it. At least he's thinking there are reasons not to do it. And those reasons were discussed previously, that it's wrong to take money for that service, or there may be other considerations. I cannot refuse even a small request from you. I agree to be your priest. I shall fulfill your request by dedicating my life and possessions. So, not only he's saying, even though there's a reason not to do it, I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it well. Like you might say, all right, I'll do it. And you do a lousy job. You don't want to do it. So the key thing is here, is this superior, you're my superiors, so whatever you say, I do. That's really the key. And then today's verse, I'll read it again. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, O King, after making this promise to the demigods, the exalted Vishwarupa, surrounded by the demigods, performed the necessary priestly activities with great enthusiasm and attention. So again here we see that not only did he say, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it well, he did it well, because it says enthusiasm and attention. So he really gave himself to it. Purport. The word samadhina is very important. Samadhi means complete absorption with an undiverted mind. Vishwarup, who was a most learned brahmana, not only accepted the request of the demigods, but took their request seriously and performed the activities of priesthood with an undiverted mind. In other words, he accepted the priesthood not for material gain, but to profit the demigods. Such is the duty of a priest. The word pura means family, and hita means benefit. Thus, the word purohita indicates that the priest is the well-wisher of the family. Another meaning of the word pura is first. A priest's first duty is to see that his disciples benefit spiritually and materially by all means. Then he is satisfied. A priest should never be interested in performing Vedic rituals for his personal benefit. So, does anyone have anybody not understand this verse and purport? Is everybody clear? Yes. No? Certain samskaras are necessary, and the priest will do that for the family? For his own family? Yes. And other families? Yeah. Is that a statement? Question? He'll do personal benefit. Will he do it for his family? Yeah. But they're not for his personal benefit. Not for material benefit. I have a theory that we didn't understand this. That's why I wanted to first ask you. And so this class will be trying to prove my theory that maybe we didn't understand it fully. Maybe some of us understood it more, and maybe some of us didn't understand it at all. And so let me go back 43 years. I think it was 43 years ago. I was in Los Angeles, and a book fell in my lap. And this book was all the letters from Srila Prabhupada about Grihastha life. And it was a very big book. It was a photocopy. So maybe 100 pages this size, or 200 pages. Someone had compiled everything that Prabhupada had said about Grihastha life. And we all got to read that book. There were hundreds of us living there at that time. And that book was circulated. And of the hundreds of us who read that book and all those quotes, I don't think more than 1% are still married to the same person they were married to in 1972. So we had the information, right? This is what it means to be Grihastha. But something didn't work. And Hare Krishna. And what didn't work was that we grew up in a culture in which dharma was no longer relevant or prevalent or ingrained within the culture. We came to Krishna consciousness, and we grew up in a culture where the mantra was the antithesis of dharma. And the mantra was, if it feels good, do it. You know that mantra? You sometimes see it on t-shirts. What does that mean? If it feels good, do it. Well, there's another half of that mantra: as long as it doesn't hurt anybody. Of course, how will you know it won't hurt anybody? How do you know your McDonald's burger doesn't hurt anybody? You don't know that. But anyway, they were trying to be generous. If it feels good, do it. Why is that opposed to dharma? Is Shastra Vidhim Utsrija Vartate Kama Karata? What does Krishna say? He said, when you give up Shastra, there's a reason you give it up, even if you don't even know what the Shastra is. Let's say You don't know Shastra, so you can't give it up. But you know something about duty. That you learn that in grammar school, right? First grade, second grade, you learn something about duty, being nice to superiors. So Krishna uses the word kama, which we know means lust, vartate, to do. But Prabhupada translates the word as whim. So you give up the injunction of the Shastra to act whimsically. So then Prabhupada's juxtaposing. Juxtapose means, that's a big word if English is not your first language, right? How many of you understand the word juxtaposed? Wow, only three. That makes me feel proud. I could use a word you don't understand. Wow, I must be smart, right? Juxtapose means you're putting something against something else. So on one side you have Shastra Bidhi, the injunction of Shastra. The other side you have whim. It's the opposite. Well, you're actually putting it this way. On the top, Shastra Vidhi, and then 180 degrees down, you have whim. So what does whim mean? Whim means you do what you feel like doing, right? Whatever it feels like, that's what you do. So we grew up in a culture where it was kind of like you do what you feel like. So your parents, it's Saturday morning, and your parents say, what do you feel like doing today? And you say, I don't know, what do you feel like doing? You say, well, ask your brother what he feels. Well, I kind of feel like going to the beach. Oh, that would be good. That would be fun. We can. So it's all about feeling. It's all about what's fun. Right? Your parents didn't say, what's the dharmic thing? Saturday morning, what's the dharmic thing we should do today? They say, what do you feel like doing? So everything's about feeling. What does it make you feel good? Look at the advertising. You know, you'll enjoy, you'll feel good. And the reason you feel bad is that you don't have this upgraded phone. It'll make you feel good. So it's all about feeling. And so Prabhupada is teaching us, this is your duty. You should do this. When you get married, stick it out. When you take a vow at initiation, stick it out. When you take sannyas, stick it out. When you have a service, stick it out. Right? And to top it off, the icing on the cake is the Bhagavad Gita is all about what? Arjuna says, I don't feel like fighting. Can I be a Brahmin? That feels better. I'll just go to the forest. I'll feel better. Isn't it? So our whole scripture, the whole main book, the book that we only read from for many years, we didn't read from Bhagavatam, we read Bhagavad Gita morning and evening. That book is all about what? It's all about everything else. Everything which opposes, if it feels good, do it. Right? It's all about, this is your duty. And Arjuna says, I don't feel like it. And Krishna says, it doesn't matter what you feel like it. Krishna said something amazing. And you all know this verse, but the reason it's amazing is, go on Google and Google the word success and find and see how many books, The Seven Secrets of Success, Success Principles, The Mystery of Success, How to Be Successful, The Most Successful People, The Ten Principles to Success, right? The Five Principles of Success That Nobody Knows, you know. On and on and on. And what does Krishna say? Krishna says, do your dharma. Whether you fail or succeed, it doesn't matter. How politically incorrect is that? How revolutionary is that? We're going to go to the corporations with all the big achievers at the success seminar, and they're going to ask us to speak, and we're going to say, to hell with your success. Just do your dharma. Don't worry about success. Don't worry about failure. Just do your dharma. That's Bhagavad Gita, right? So, in this verse, Vishwarupa is saying, you're my superiors. You ordered me. I don't feel like doing this. I don't think it's such a good idea, but I'm going to do it. Because you've ordered me, and therefore it's now my dharma, so I do it. We joined ISKCON, we didn't have that consciousness. We did not have that consciousness. 200 pages of quotes about what it means to be married and not get divorced. And I can count on the two or three fingers of my right hand how many devotees who were married then are still married to the same woman. And it's about three that I can think of. And our main scripture says, do your duty, right? Isn't that interesting? Now we have another amazing example in our scripture of somebody who didn't feel like doing something, who did something, which is really hard to do if you don't feel like doing it. And that's, he got married and he didn't feel like it. If you actually meditate on this, it's really amazing the more you think about it. Maharaj Priyavrata was, had no need to be married, but he was asked to be king. So they said, we need you to be the king, and if you're going to be the king, you got to get married, because there's got to be a prince, and you know, it's the dynasty has to continue. He said, I'm fine the way I am. I don't really want to do this. I decided to be brahmachari. They said, no, it's not going to work. You're the only one to do this. And he fought it. As we say in America, he fought it tooth and nail. I don't know what that means. I don't know where the tooth and nail came from. But it means he fought. And he fought. And he fought. No, 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 no. I'm not doing it. No, no. So then Brahma comes down and said, yes, you are. He says, okay, if Brahma comes down and asks me, I guess I should probably do it. So he does it, right? What's so amazing about the fact that he did it? The amazing fact is not only that he did it, but he did it just the way Vishwarupa did it, with attention, with detail, and he did it perfectly. And his wife and kids were actually happy. And he didn't even want to be married. That's amazing if you think about it, right? Because inside, his feeling was, renunciation is the way to go. That's my happiness. That's what I feel like. But because he was asked to do something different, he could subdue that feeling, and then not only subdue it, but he could perfectly act according to his dharma, that role. Isn't that amazing? And be a good husband. So good that his wife and kids never had any inclination that he was detached. Isn't that amazing? So the reason I said I don't think we understand this verse is because you can understand something with your head, but if you don't act it, it means you haven't understood it. And this for us, particularly as Westerners or people being raised in an India that's becoming increasingly Westernized, this is the challenge. This is how Kali Yuga degrades. Dharma, duty. I do what I feel like doing. Isn't it? Okay, so then we have another problem. What's the next problem? We take initiation vows. We promise. Wow, that's huge. We promise to who? To our guru, to the deities, in front of the Vaishnavas, in front of Vishnu in the form of the fire. We promise. And then 10 years later we say, I don't feel like it. I don't have the feeling anymore. Yes? Isn't it ultimately? Feeling duty, feeling, what do you feel like and what do you do? So there's something important that is so interesting about Vedic culture. One time, a devotee couldn't figure out how two people could get married and they never even met one another before. I mean, for a Westerner, that's like the height of insanity. I mean, there couldn't be nothing more insane than, when did you meet your wife? I met her on the wedding day. That's like, okay, where's the nearest mental hospital? Can we take you there and lock you up and strap you down? That's crazy. So the devotee asked Prabhupada, how does that work? If you don't love them, how do you get married? And Prabhupada said, no, the love develops after you're married. Isn't that interesting? The love develops as a result of the dharma, of the commitment. Because the Western idea is, you have to love to get married, and the Indian idea is, you have to get married to love. Isn't that interesting? Love comes as a byproduct of doing your dharma. But the Western idea is, first you feel it, then you do it. And the dharmic idea is, first you do it, and then you feel it. It's completely different. So the Western mind is, how can you do it if you don't feel it? Isn't it? And the dharmic idea is, you will feel it by doing it. Just like we all know the story. Gargamuni, New York, Jewish. You don't get more puffed up than New York Jewish wealthy family. I mean, that's it, you know. Srila Prabhupada, I don't feel like bowing down. That's like typical New York Jewish. How can I say that? Mahatma Prabhu, you're offensive. My father's from New York and he's Jewish. I can say it. I come from New York Jewish family, so I can say that. So what does Prabhupada say? He says, do it if you don't feel like it, because by doing it, you'll feel like it. So, so many times devotees have this, they're puzzled, they're confused. What do I do if I don't feel like it? Because we're so conditioned to act only based on what we feel like. And we don't know how to act if we don't feel like it. There's this dharmic thing, even though it's the essence of Bhagavad Gita. The book we study every day, the book we've preached for so many years, we didn't get it because it's not part of our culture. So, I have something interesting to tell you, which is very depressing, which will undermine everything I've said and all the benefit you're going to get from this class. But just so you don't feel bad when you're thinking, oh my God, Mahatma Prabhu's describing me. That's exactly what I'm like. I don't get it. So I was discussing with Bhaktivedya Purnaswami this concept of, we're discussing the concept of Priyavrata Maharaj, who did this dharmic thing. And Maharaj said, I don't preach this anymore, this dharmic thing. I said, why not? He said, I gave up. He said, nobody gets it. They just don't get it. I'm sick of talking about it. They don't get it. It just, why don't we get it? Because we don't come from that culture. We don't come from that background. Now this presents another dynamic, which is very interesting. Can you understand something if you don't have the samskaras for it? If these are not your samskaras, if you were not raised in terms of you listen to superiors, whatever they say, even if it's wrong, you respect them and somehow or other you satisfy them. How many of you come from that culture? All two of you happen to be in Indian bodies, okay, and one Asian body. The pure white Anglo-Saxons didn't raise their hands, right? When I grew up, the hippies had another, aside from it feels good, do it, if it feels good, do it, they had another one, question authority. That was the other mantra, was the foundation of the hippie movement, if it feels good, do it, and question authority. And those were the people that came to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, here's the authority, here's your dharma. How difficult was it to inculcate this concept of dharma and not act based on how we feel? Extremely difficult. So, I just want to make all of us aware that these samskaras that we bring into the Hare Krishna movement, they do affect us, and sometimes they affect us to the degree that even you're reading something and you can't actually understand it because your samskaras are spinning one way and the knowledge is spinning the other way. And that's why some of us will one day wake up 40 years later and we'll read a verse and the lights will go off and we'll say, oh my Govinda, I think I finally understand that verse. And the reason is the samskaras, after 40 years of hanging around devotees and going to the Dham and chanting, some new samskaras get planted and you begin to see the world a little differently so you can actually understand that. Does that make sense? Like, you can read every book ever written on grihastha life and it's no guarantee you won't get divorced, even if you have 108% compatibility. You've got to have some samskaras that say commitment means commitment. When I say I do it, I do it. If you don't have that samskara, you're going to have problems. Isn't it? And we need those samskaras because we don't only get married or we don't only remain brahmachari, brahmacharini, we take vows. And we need those samskaras. And that's why Prabhupada, he was so upset when people didn't follow their vows, and so upset to the point where he made a statement which was very heavy and could be seen as very disappointing, discouraging, and making us feel extremely guilty if we don't follow our vows. But he said, you're an animal. Because when you don't do Dharma, outside of Dharma, what are you? Outside of Vedas, mleccha. What does mleccha mean? It means an animal. Go to Bhagavatam, the instructions to Yudhisthira by Bhishma. He lists 10 principles of human beings. Not to get angry. If you get angry, you're not human. You don't keep a promise, you're not human. So Prabhupada's making this point. If you don't keep a promise, it's not dharmic. If you don't know how to be dharmic, it's not human. So that's why Prabhupada was so upset. Right? Okay, now let me go to the other side. Because I don't want everybody to commit suicide after class. And we're on the first floor and it could be easy to jump out the window here because there's no screens to prevent you. I mean, they open up. So, I want to tell a story. I see everybody's about to go into a state of neurotic depression now, thinking, I don't have those samskaras, I can't understand anything. You know, I only get married if I like the way she walks and talks, otherwise no. So when the devotees first came to India, they were young Americans, and young Americans in their 20s, as the saying goes, the only culture in Australia is in the yogurt. I say the same thing for the hippie. The only culture in the hippie movement was in the yogurt. There was no culture. So these uncultured people, somehow or other, Krishna sent them to serve Prabhupada, and they came to India, and the Indians saw them, and they said, Srila Prabhupada, these disciples you have, they have no culture. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to talk. They don't know how to relate. They don't know how to eat. They don't know how to treat people. And Prabhupada said, yes, I know. But they have one good quality. And that good quality is, they will do anything I tell them. So Prabhupada knew we were a big mess. Definitely he knew that. And Prabhupada knew we didn't have the right samskaras. And it would definitely, I'm not saying it's not a disadvantage, it is a disadvantage. And when we didn't keep our vows, he was upset. He was very upset. There's no question he was upset. But Prabhupada was unlimitedly tolerant, so he would accept us back if we had the sincere desire to serve. Because sincerity is all powerful. And if you have sincerity, and that sincerity is what will motivate you to continue the process. And someday in the future, as we continue the process, we become more and more dharmic. So we can come to the point where we say, I'm doing this because my guru asked me, not because I like it or I don't like it. And that's part of what Prabhupada calls being simple. There's a story where a devotee, he wrote Prabhupada and said, I'm thinking about doing this, but I'm thinking about doing that, and maybe I should do this, and I'm not really sure if I should do that, and maybe I should go here, but if I go here, this will happen. If I stay here, this will happen. You know, your typical brahmachari, right? American brahmachari. That was 1975, half the brahmacharis used to think like that. I want to go with the sannyasis, but if I go, then there's no head pujari, and my temple president won't be happy. But if I stay here, I'll probably get married, and actually, I'd rather preach than be a pujari, because if I preach, I'll be inspired. But then, you know, if I'm not pujari, who will do it? So, like that. So, Prabhupada got one of those letters, and he was so upset with that, because again, it indicated this lack of stability. And Prabhupada just told him, basically, he didn't say it in this way, but I'll say it kind of, if you had to put it into two words, shut up. Stop complaining. And then Prabhupada said, a devotee wants 6 feet by 2 to sleep. He wants a little service and a little prasadam, and he's satisfied. So what does that mean? What is Prabhupada saying? It's not about how you feel. It's about be satisfied. You have a little service, be satisfied. You have a place. Just be simple. Don't be so complicated. I'm not feeling it. So I understand that's the culture we come from. But the culture we're in is much more different. It's the superior says you do this and you do it. At all costs, you do it as far as possible. Don't give it up. Continue it. Be steady. That's what pleased Prabhupada. Now I have a story. It's a really interesting story which makes this point. There was a devotee who Prabhupada personally placed as a temple president. And he was not as qualified as the other temple presidents, by far. And everybody knew it, including Prabhupada. He was not even really cut out to be a manager. It was not his nature. And everybody knew it. In fact, when he managed, he would get confused. And he would be stressed out. If you're not a manager, if someone puts you in a management position, simple things put you in anxiety. You can't figure them out and you complicate everything. Have you noticed that? With people who don't know how to manage and everything easy is complicated, you know. So, but Prabhupada put him in that position. Why do you think Prabhupada did that? Who can guess based on this class? Who would like to guess? Because, yes. Good qualities, yes, but what specific quality? Brahminical? Surrender, yeah, but specifically. If he does what Prabhupada said, he'll get the quality of being a manager. He never got it exactly, but dutiful, yeah. Because Prabhupada knew if I put him as the president, he'll never leave. And he looked at these other guys who were high flyers, but he didn't have confidence that they would stay. So he chose the person who would stay over the person who was qualified. Isn't that interesting? He knew this devotee was so dedicated, he would do whatever Prabhupada asked. So even if it was difficult, and it was very difficult, his service was very difficult, he was in a difficult situation, but Prabhupada knew he would stay. And he got so much mercy from Prabhupada because of that. So this is something we should meditate on, that when we have duty, and we do it even if we don't feel like it, Prabhupada is very pleased. Because that's dharmic. And that's what Arjuna did. Didn't he? Eventually, you know, he said, I don't feel like it, but I'm going to do it. So this is a big principle for us. Now, someone might say, someone like Kunti might raise his hand and say, but what about, shouldn't we be inspired by our nature to do something we like for Krishna? Are you going to ask that question? What? Then his wife would have asked the question. Okay. So, and the answer is yes, we should do what inspires us according to our nature. But that's a little different. We should be dharmic, but we should do what is our dharma, right? So yes, okay, according to my nature, maybe I want to get married. Okay, so get married and be dharmic. According to my nature, I want to be a leader. Okay, be a leader, but be dharmic. Do it steadily. Don't just be whimsical. When things don't feel good, you run away. So, Prabhupada had to deal with all of this, all of his young disciples who didn't feel like it. He had to deal with this. 75 years old, 22-year-old man writing Prabhupada, I don't feel like it. That's what 5-year-olds say. You have to go to school. I don't feel like it. Right? Isn't it? These are grown adults writing letters to Prabhupada. I don't feel like it. This is what Prabhupada had to deal with. And it was so difficult for us to understand. The last point I want to make, which goes along with this other point, how do you understand something you don't have the samskara for? You understand by seeing another person who has that samskara, by seeing how they act. And one of the challenges we have in ISKCON today, and which I've noticed, and it's not a challenge any one of us can fix tomorrow, but we have to contribute individually. If the Bhagavatam speaker or Prabhupada is teaching something, but on the ground in our movement something else is going on, it's extremely difficult to understand that because you don't see it. And it doesn't make sense to you philosophically because you don't see it. So we obviously have to become aligned with Prabhupada's teachings and exemplify them as best we can. Because if we don't, then the person is sitting on the seat speaking something and you go out of the class and say, that was nice, but I've never seen that in our movement. And how can you act and understand something that you don't see? It's very difficult. And subconsciously, it means it must not be important because no one's doing it. Or it must mean nobody can do it. Otherwise, Prabhupada says do it, but nobody can do it. What we're realizing after 50 years of ISKCON is that many of the things that Prabhupada told us, number one, we didn't have the samskaras, and now we're starting to get them. Or number two, we didn't have the brains to understand, and now we're starting to understand. And sometimes it goes together. But each of us individually, we want to become examples of what Prabhupada taught, because that helps all of us become better devotees, because we see one another living those examples. Okay. This sign says stop at 8:45. It's 8:47. And it says questions and answers finished, right? And comments. So, it's really difficult for me to say everything I have to say in a half an hour. So, we have to officially end, which means that anyone who wants to leave can officially leave, and anyone who wants to stay to make comments and ask questions can stay. And I think it's better you just stay seated where you are if you want to stay, and then if you need to leave, get up and leave, and I won't be offended. And even if I am, I know how to forgive you because I teach about forgiveness. So it's just as my duty to the timing of the class, I have to officially end. But anyone who wants to stay is welcome. And then we can continue questions and answers. Okay? So somebody had a question. Yes. We have a microphone.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for your lecture. Actually, I've been just very deeply thinking about that point also. That if we don't see, then how will we be able to to do that? But my question is more that what if a person is doing the Dharma year out, year in, and going through very, very difficult times, but still doing the Dharma, but then coming to a point that the person has to choose between dying / getting crazy or stop. I mean, dying / getting crazy doing the Dharma or stop.
All right. It's a good title for a book. What if doing the Dharma drives you crazy? Maybe you can write the book. Okay. Prabhupada was amazing because Prabhupada always focused on the essence. And that's why I made that point about the sincerity, because that's what Prabhupada valued the most, was sincerity. So if Prabhupada saw somebody, just because of their conditioning, unable to do the Dharma, but very sincere in trying to serve him, he understood that paradox. And that paradox is explained in the Bhagavatam. Oh, I want to serve you, but on the other hand, I'm walking away from you. We're all like this living paradox. The disciple prays to the guru, I want to serve you, but every day I fail you, and my mind is so crazy, you give me the right instruction, but I always do the opposite thing. So Prabhupada understood that. He understood that was our condition. But he understood that if someone were sincere, then the most important thing is I have to put them in a situation where they can be enthusiastic in their devotional service, even if I allow them to do what dharmically would be considered the wrong thing, for which he would get criticized by his god brothers and others. So sometimes that's why we see somebody falls down from sannyas, Prabhupada comes, says, come see me. They come, he embraces them, puts them in a position. What do you want? Temple president, GBC, whatever you want. Why? Because he saw the sincerity. And he knew that sincerity. There's a saying someone said, it's very powerful, we should make a t-shirt. Sincerity is all powerful. Sincerity is all powerful. Because nahi kalyana krit kashchid. One who does good is never overcome by evil. So Prabhupada saw that. So we are so fortunate that Prabhupada was not a fanatical, ritualistic guru who stuck to his guns of ritual. No, you've fallen down as a sannyasi, you're a vitangsi, we don't want to see your face, maybe in 100 lifetimes, you can come back. You're rejected. He was never like that. Prabhupada knew who we were. We were mercy cases. And so what Prabhupada valued the most was our sincerity, because he knew if a devotee is sincere and somehow or other I can keep him going in bhakti, he'll succeed. And no one ever felt, despite whatever they did, if they wanted to get up and fight again, nobody ever felt that Prabhupada had any animosity or negative feeling towards them. Never. Because he didn't. So Prabhupada, that's why Prabhupada was a Jagaguru. That's why he could spread Krishna consciousness around the world. And I guarantee you, if other of Prabhupada's godbrothers came, some of them wouldn't have been able to do that. They just would have said, no. Here's a story, funny story. Puri Maharaj, Prabhupada's godbrothers. Guru Kripa tells this story in Vrindavan. He said he was going to see Puri Maharaj every day, and Puri Maharaj was saying, you Americans, you can't be Brahmins. You can. You're Malechas. You're low class. You can't be Brahmins. So Guru Kripa Maharaj stopped coming. He said, Maharaj, that's not true. Prabhupada never said that. And he stopped coming. And so after 3 days, he came back. And Puri Maharaj said, why weren't you coming? He said, Maharaj, because you're saying we can't become Brahmins. Prabhupada never said that. Maharaj said, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry like that, right? So then Maharaj gave his class, and then Guru Kripa was leaving. And he was saying, goodbye, Maharaj. I'm going away. I won't see you for a while. And Maharaj said, I still say you can't be Brahmins, right when he was leaving. So, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. If Srila Prabhupada were like that, we'd all have committed suicide by now, because so many of us would have failed Prabhupada. Right, fallen from sannyas, fallen from grihastha life, fallen from brahmachari life, and we would have just killed ourselves either physically or literally or emotionally. Prabhupada was never like that. It was always go on. And no matter how you fell, if you did something wonderful, that's all Prabhupada cared about. Thank you, thank you, thank you. So we have to treat ourselves in the same way. If you come to a junction and say, okay, I know I should do this, but because I'm so conditioned, I have to do this. At least let me do it in a way that is as Krishna conscious as possible. And I can make the best use of it, and I can use this to somehow or other please Prabhupada. What else? Just like myself. I know, I can tell you 100 ways to fail in household life, because I already did it. I was married and I failed. And I think it's my wife's great fortune that I did, because I didn't fail on her, I failed on somebody else. So because of that, I'm not failing on her. So it was 22 years, we're still, you know, here we are, we're still going. We actually like one another after 22 years. Isn't that amazing? We actually respect one another, we're nice to one another. But that's because I made all these mistakes. And after I made them, there was a side of me that felt like, I really blew it and I want to do it right. And people say, why did you get married? Because I was like 42, and that's, you know, kind of, all right, you know, a little bit older. And you're already married and you're renounced. And, you know, sometimes I can't answer the question, but there was a side of me like I felt I failed, I did it wrong, and I just, some, like, I want to do it right. And Prabhupada wrote me and he said, I will not give sannyas to anyone who's not first ideal grihastha. And so I did it again. So maybe it wasn't the best thing, but somehow or other. Now I can give workshops on grihastha life and tell all the men 108 things that you're doing wrong, because I did 109. So I know them. I know exactly what to do if you want to mess up your grihastha life. So then I can make a good use out of it, and then I can feel, okay, Prabhupada, you know, I cut out of the mud and got back on the road and we're okay. And I know Prabhupada's happy with that. If you can write, if you can tell Prabhupada, this is what I'm doing, we're preaching in this way, and my husband and I were doing really well, even though I remarried, I'm very happy. I know that, because that's what he did. So, we have to treat ourselves in the same way. It's not a reason not to fight and not try to be strong, but when you determine this path will ultimately get me to Krishna better than this path, then take it. That's the ultimate goal. That's all Prabhupada cares, is how are you going to get back to Godhead? You know, if you stick this way to your dharma and you end up failing, what's the point? But you take it this way, okay, let me try it again. First marriage failed, all right. I was sannyas, I failed, but okay, I'll get married, I'll do grihastha ashram right. All right. Will I get back to Godhead? Okay. If it works, do it. Yes?
Because at the end of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also says, Sarva Dharma Parityaya. It's like, you know,
yes.
the path of surrender, give up that which is not beneficial for your Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So I just wonder if sometimes Dharma can get in the way for Krishna consciousness, or that's a dangerous philosophy?
Can Dharma get in the way? Yeah, it can, if you're too attached to it. If you don't understand the essence. I was giving class this morning. It's a really nice topic. I do online class. Unfortunately, it's at 5:30 in the morning, so otherwise I wouldn't invite everybody to come. It's not a good time. Well, it's a good time for those who don't like chanting japa, I guess. If you don't like japa, then you can come every Wednesday morning, come to my house. We have class. So, but the topic was great, is what pleases Prabhupada. You know, so we're going through this whole list of things that please Prabhupada. And one of the things that, this is just from my observation, one of the things that pleased Prabhupada is you would tell him, I did this program, this preaching program, and so many people came, and so many people took prasadam, and so many people chanted Hare Krishna, and so many men joined the temple and so on. That would please Prabhupada so much, or so many books were distributed. Anytime you were report the advancement of preaching, Prabhupada was so happy. So he didn't say, yeah, but why did you remarry? Yeah, you got 50,000 people, you Janmashtami, but why did you remarry? But why did you give up your sannyas? Or why did you give up your role as temple president? Now, if you could give the report and still be dharmic, that's double blessings, right? But he never said, yeah, you did good, but you should have stayed as temple president. No. If you gave up your duty and you went and did out some phenomenal preaching, Prabhupada would simply forget that you gave up your duty. He was like, keep going, I'm very pleased. whenever we spread Krishna consciousness, that would please Prabhupada. So, yes, if we're too attached to our duty and it would some way get in the way of spreading Krishna consciousness, or you get so heavy with people that they feel guilty because they're not dharmic, that's not good. And that can happen. Yes, yes.
I was thinking, so the best dharma is to follow the instructions of the spiritual master and to please him. And once that's happening, you are dharmic.
Yes, yes.
Thank you.
And that's not always easy. Just like I was put in charge of a temple when I was a very young devotee, and it was very, very difficult. And I just wanted to leave. So following that instruction, it was not difficult. I mean, it was very difficult. Or the instruction when Prabhupada says, follow your temple president, follow your authorities, follow your GBC. Sometimes that's a very difficult instruction to follow. You don't feel like following them, you feel like strangling them sometimes, right? Isn't it? And you're supposed to do that. So sometimes following the instruction is not always easy. And sometimes we have to work together, and it's really difficult to work together because we don't feel like it. I don't feel like working with this devotee. Right? And so that's one of the biggest challenges. The spiritual master says, work together. Really difficult sometimes, right? So to be able to work together, we can't just operate on the, I don't, the chemistry between me and Prabhu is, it's not really good, and I'd rather work like on a different side of the universe than that person. And Guru Maharaj says, no, you're working in the same room, and you figured out how to do it. So sometimes following that order is difficult. But if we get beyond if it's just about me and how I feel, then we can start working together, making sacrifices. I mean, the whole problem in Kali Yuga is all about how I feel, what makes me happy. That's everything. That's all that matters, right? That's what we're up against. Because we grew up in that culture. Isn't it? It's now the culture, send your parents to the old age home because it's too much trouble. And I got my job and I'm too busy and I'm making a lot of money and I got a nice car and a nice house. And if I have to stop working, take care of her, it's too much trouble. So that's what's happening, right? Okay, Prabhus, the moral of the class is if you want to make a lot of money, start old age homes in India because they're going to be the newest fad in the future. Because Kali Yuga will move everyone to kick their parents out and we'll make millions of dollars with old age homes and we'll build millions of temples. I mean, isn't it? Isn't it true? That's going to be the next big trend? Yeah. This is all about me. That's the problem. That's whim and Shastra. Shastra controls you. Whim is whatever you want. Okay? Is there anything else? Is everybody okay? Yes. Sadhana. When you love Krishna, you can be whimsical because then it's perfect, right? Everything you do is perfect. Yes. One last question or comment.
It's just a question. Is there any way of catching up on those samskaras when you're an adult?
Yeah. Very good question. Can you catch up on the samskaras? Yeah, you can. You can say one sense, everything you do, say, and speak is a samskara. So everything you do, say, and speak is affecting you. Because samskara means impression. So I can speak from my experience. By seeing, by hearing continually over and over again, I said that's why one day you'll wake up and you'll look at something in Shastra and you go, oh, so that means we're not supposed to get divorced. Oh, I didn't know that. Something as simple as that, right? So Prabhupada said it's so simple you can miss it. So that's why people ask Bhaktivedanta Purnaswami, where did you learn all about this? You learned so much about Vedic culture. Where did you learn about it? He goes, in the Bhagavatam. And everybody's like, what? I read the Bhagavatam. I didn't learn that. So, but as you advance and your samskaras increase, then you everything's perceived differently. So, being living in India, I think the thing is, if you're resistant to the culture, you don't get the samskaras. You know, if you like, so you have to be open to the samskaras. And one of the basic samskaras of Vedic culture is respect towards superiors. That's really a big one. And Maharaj made such a nice point on Sunday. He said, we saw in ISKCON, when the respect for authority went down, the preaching went down, everything went down. And it's not just about qualified authority. It's about respect for authority as a principle. Authorities may be qualified, not qualified. We had so many. I mean, I joined in 1969. How qualified were the temple presidents in 1969? We had absolute respect for them. They told us, you wash the pots? That's what we did. Who are you to tell me to wash the pots? I'm 19, you're 20. I went to university, you're a high school dropout. You know. I should be telling you to wash pots. It was never like that. No, you joined 2 weeks before me. You're my Prabhu. You tell me to wash the pots, I wash them. That's what it was like. We learned that. That's a very, you know, what are these samskaras? Respect is a very important samskara. Commitment is very important. So these things, they're also, you know, it's not just Vedic. It's part of any culture. So I think the more we understand, look, see. One of my students years ago in the 70s, he overheard me bargaining with someone to buy a harmonium. He pulled me out of the room and he said, I'll buy it for you. And then I told a devotee that so-and-so, he was in his 70s. I told another devotee that was working at the school, this was in Vrindavan, VIT, and he said, yes, this is culture. This man, he's an old man, he knows culture. He sees his teacher wants something, he says, Dakshin, I'll buy it for you. So just by that devotee saying, this is culture, a samskar went in my heart. Oh, he's your teacher, you respect your teacher. You hear your teacher wants something, you do it. It's not just your guru. It's anyone who's your guru, right? So gradually, if you keep your eyes and ears open, the samskaras, they'll start affecting you more and more and more, and then you'll change. My daughter, when she goes to the West, it's very interesting to be with her because she always turns to me and says, what those kids are doing, that's not right. Because she learns the proper respect in school. She says, oh, those kids, you know, it was time to eat and all the kids ate. They didn't wait for the parents. Because they would never do that in her school. They would actually serve the adults first. So it's very interesting to watch her and saying, oh, they shouldn't have done that, they shouldn't have done that, this is not proper, because she's learning the culture. So if you keep your eyes open, you'll see the culture. It gets worn off on you, and gradually you'll start acting differently, be more dharmic. Okay? That's all right? Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gopremanandi Hari Hari Bol. Gauranga Nityananda.